Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Speaking a bit more quieter than usual, since me and Anthony here, he's sitting a couple of meters from me, working on his laptop for his work. We're in Mykolaiv now. We arrived today with a very long trip from Kiev, and went through Odessa. Also grabbed an interview with the Belarusian guys who are here and fighting for Ukraine now. They were very enthusiastic. I got the famous Kit, the guy who basically is the commander of all these forces here and who's ready to, after the war, go back home and do things about Lukashenko's regime. But due to the sensitive information of the whole subject matter and how it needs to be approved so that I don't post anything bad about this, I'm going to spend tomorrow evening writing about the situation there. Probably not going to have an episode tomorrow evening because of this, because I don't know how tired I'll be, because tomorrow we're going and having an interview with the rescue guys and with the governor, apparently, and maybe with the mayor as well. I couldn't really understand the guys that were taking me around here, but lots of work. If there's a missile strike here, we'll also go and investigate that thing. So, a lot of work. I will be writing an article about the interview with the Belarusian guys, since that kind of matters, since, well, Girkin and other pro-Russian people commenting on the whole mobilization in the war, they have been pushing the fact that Lukashenko needs to enter the war and that, you know, he has everything to lose and nothing to gain from staying aside, even though entering the war with troops would also be a breaking point and would probably cost him his life as well. It's a complex situation. So I believe that what the Belarusians that are fighting for Ukraine told me is really important. I'm going to get that one published because, yeah, well, I don't know how to pre-approve podcasts. I have to show the written text to the guys, so I'll do that. But in general, we have a bunch of interesting stuff to tell you about anyways. Today, we also, you know, during this whole travel, have to say the roads were pretty good. Well, the ones that were recently fixed, apparently. Zelensky has been investing a lot of money in this whole situation. And the roads were quite high quality. Also, I have to say that the gas station food here in Ukraine, it's amazing. It's much better than what we have back in Latvia. And, well, the fanciest gas station that I saw was an Azerbaijani one. I don't remember the name of it, though, but really, they had, like, looked like a fancy cafe inside in their whole store thing. Weird. All this cultural thing is a bit different than at home, but managing. On the way to Mykolaiv, we saw a bunch of trucks that were apparently either carrying a lot of supplies for the front lines, or, well, on the other hand, there were also a lot of the trucks standing on the side of the road, since they probably were carrying the grain for export, but neither of this nor Mykolaiv had allowed them to enter, apparently, because of the danger. There had been more strikes in Odessa with the drones today. So that was a situation. Not many checkpoints on the way on the Kiev side, on the upper side of Ukraine, but on our way from Odessa to Mykolaiv, there were checkpoints. Obviously, we got checked quite thoroughly, had to show my passport and accreditation, everything. And in Mykolaiv, there is what you would call a light camouflage. That is, everything is super darkened in case of any strikes and things like that. So a bit of a hard adventure here. We're going to record a longer episode once we get back, and I have some plans about what I'm going to write and what's going to happen, and obviously preparing to do all sorts of things, but just, oh, so tired. Probably the longest road trip in my life. About the referendums, well, I wanted to check how the Russian side defends these obviously sham referendums, and they have some excuses. For example, Girkin states that everyone who was... Girkin obviously has to defend the position that all these referendums that are happening here are totally legit because, you know, he was the guy who went in Crimea and literally threatened the deputies there to organize the referendum under guns. He was the guy with the guns in the whole referendum area in Kiev, sorry, in Crimea, which was a sham referendum here. But he can't say that he basically forced everyone to join. So now he states that these referendums that involve both Luhansk and Donetsk and Kherson and Zaporozhye, which is interesting, also kind of have to be admitted as legitimate. And he states that in Luhansk and Donetsk, these sham referendums, well, obviously they're going to be over 90% because everyone who was an evil hohol, as he likes to call them, have left already, and that people there are really, really hopeful for the Russian occupation, which I find doubtful, although, you know, everyone who was pro-Ukraine kind of did leave those areas. So that's a bit weird situation, although they've been living under a dictatorship of Dmitry Pushilin, who used to run MMM for a long while. But the pro-Russian side also tries to justify that all these other referendums will be totally legit, even we have clear information that these referendums are literally being pushed under the barrel of a gun there. They have apparently, to reports from the Kherson Telegram, they are basically moving in the squads of three, you know, just like in that old Soviet joke, you know, why does the KGB always walk around in squads of three? Well, one to read, one to write, and the other one to look at the two to look after the two intellectuals. And the same thing is happening apparently, and there are doors that are being kicked in. You know, people just are. A lot of people just have their doors kicked in. Angry guys with guns come in. They force you to scrap something on the paper, and you better check the right, you know, the correct mark. And then they leave. And a lot of people complain about this on Twitter as well. So, extremely legit referenda. And also, you know, if you remember that earlier in the war, Russia deported a lot of Ukrainians to various regions, mostly into the Far East. So there are voting booths for this referendum in Sakhalin and in other, like, distant areas where hundreds of thousands of people have been deported. And yeah, obviously they're totally voluntary. You can go there and vote while being deported over there for, well, you being super happy that your previous place where you lived in is now, well, under Russian control, which is kind of funny. Especially thinking that probably no one in those areas actually goes and votes, but such a nice way of creating a referendum where you can just say that in Sakhalin, everyone, all the 3 bajillion people who now live there from Ukraine voted yes for them to join Russia, obviously. Like, it's even easier for them. I don't even know why they bother running around homes and kicking doors in. I guess they have to perform some imitation of work there, presumably. And final thing is that Girkin and other people like him, they also mentioned Zaporozhye district, which is interesting because Russia controls a super tiny part of that region. They don't control the capital of the region. They don't control the biggest cities. They control over only 2 kind of smaller size settlements there. And then in those, to create a sham referendum for all the region joining Russian Federation, yeah, that isn't doing that well. And they don't control 100% of any of these regions. There are territories in Luhansk and Donetsk that are also under Ukrainian control. And the situation in Luhansk is even weirder since, well, the forces, Russian forces in Lyman are almost encircled. I mentioned the kind of the bag thing yesterday. There's been heavy fighting there today, and the encirclement is almost complete. At the same time, well, Russian forces, that again, Girkin and other pro-Russian people complain about, that they're being wasted, is that on the other end of the bag, they're doing some sort of counterattacks and in like useless territories. Basically, you know, when the end of your bag is closing, then you try to push some pixels on the other side of this bag to basically capture some tiny points. And even if those attacks succeed, it doesn't matter at all and doesn't change the situation, since if you move 300 meters in one direction over there, you're still getting encircled. So that's a weird decision. But Wagner Group are doing what they want, and they're not exactly under a lot of military supervision. At the same time, well, more leaders, sort of traitors to Ukraine, have been killed today. One of them, who had moved to Kherson, also had exploded. And leaders of Wagner Group have also been killed in action. These guys have, you know, very shortened lifespans, which is interesting. Nothing new about Milonov, the deputy, one of the 4 guys who moved to the front lines. Apparently he's in Donetsk now. No new information about him, but we're going to have to check soon enough, because
I think he's going to stay, even if the parliament tells him not to. In other news, well, yesterday I spoke about, well, how mobilization is a mess, and apparently, I was told that the guys will be preparing for 2 weeks, training for 2 weeks. Some of these people, we have quite a lot of people that are reporting this in various Telegram channels, is that at least 1,000, maybe a couple of thousand people are just being sent to the front lines right now, just with a day of training to kind of patch up some holes in the defenses. But I don't know how that'll work with the equipment shortages and what's happening there. Those are very fresh reports, but with the sheer amount of them, I believe that, well, even if half of them are true, then obviously things aren't looking that good, because those guys are definitely going to be casualties of the war. Secondly, we've also seen protests in Dagestani region. That's in Caucasus Mountains, and those protests are very active. I've seen videos where locals actually beat back the police and you know, grab some conscripts, soon-to-be conscripts, and just drag them away. And Dagestani people, being there, they're not Chechnya. They're angry with Chechnya, but they usually also had a very corrupt leadership. Dagestan was also one of the regions which in elections usually gathered 99.9% votes for Putin. But it looks like they've had enough, since they're also one of the poorer regions. And they've also, just like Buryatia and Zabaykalia and all those places, have been disproportionately affected by the war, since that's one of the regions, again, very hot region, very, very proud region in Caucasus Mountains, that have been affected by this war. They are also the guys who had a larger quota, because, again, poorer region, more conscripts on a regular basis, more contracted soldiers. And if you look at the map of the casualties there and the high rates, these are the people who are now being mobilized after they had already buried a lot of their own people. That's an interesting thing to look at this point. We're going to see how this goes, but so far they are quite possibly the only region that are actually doing some really good protesting, which is nice. And finally, about the mobilization, I was predicting that the borders would close, and the channel of Khodorkovsky, the oppositionary guy, he also stated that the borders will probably be closed for all males starting from 28th. But it seems that at least in some regions, and I have reports like from Flash News Ukraine, who just literally tweeted that it's happening today. I haven't seen that in pro-war channels, but I've seen reports that at least in Ryazan, they have literally been banning exits for males who are on the appropriate age, also for medical workers and other kind of strategically important workers over there in that region. So if you're a nurse there, you can't exit and everything. You have to get a special permit from the conscription center to leave. And, you know, that obviously means that they are just getting conscripted. So the situation is tightening and everything's getting more and more weird. I have a lot of things to write about. Tomorrow is going to be a long and interesting day. But, we're going to look at the successes on the front and checking out what's happening. Also, interestingly enough, one of the things that surprised me is that over here in Ukraine, you know, I've been using a lot of Arestovich sources, but a lot of people here aren't that happy about what Arestovich says in his Fagin casts, right? Since apparently he is saying some things which are not enjoyed by the military, and some people stated that he's problematic because of his political views. He used to be apparently pro-Soviet at some point. I can't really attest to that, but I've also heard reports that he was really good at the beginning of the war, the psychologist of the Ukrainians that calmed them down, but that now what he says is kind of harmful, and that a lot of people in the military would like to see him arrested. It's a weird situation. Just, you know, take him with a grain of salt. He's definitely pro-Ukraine, but locals here, you know, they're a bit skeptical about his messages. Just saying, because he's one of the more popular guys out there. But yeah, that's it for today. I'm probably going to go sleep. Maybe we're getting up early if some missile hits. Maybe not. Hopefully we can get some sleep tonight. До свидания, товарищи. And as usual, remember that happiness is mandatory.